This is a spiritual reading being given for Melinda Fitt on Saturday, the 6th of July 2024, in Victoria, Australia, by John Rawson. We stand within the Hall of Memory, and the Book of the Soul is given into our hands. And the Book of the Soul, Melinda, is a metaphor that represents all the lives, all the incarnations your soul has encountered from the time it first came into incarnation thousands and thousands of years ago. And the Book of the Soul not only contains the record of these incarnations, but it can illustrate to us characteristics of that soul, because each soul is different. Each soul came into incarnation for a slightly different reason in the first place, and each soul has its own intangible, sometimes very tangible, gifts and talents and purposes. And these are shown for a start in the fact that the book, as I hold it, has a colour on the cover. The cover is coloured a beautiful deep russet red, and russet is a colour of autumn. It is a particular colour that you see in the leaves sometimes when they're changing from green. And they go through this beautiful red stage. And so what we see here is the, how can I put it, the expression of life force. And we would find in different incarnations that very often incarnations are about expression of life force, and sometimes that will mean that your own life force is under attack, or it's something that you have to work with, your own energy levels. And sometimes it means that you're assisting others with expressing their own, their life force in professions or occupations, vocations like healing, nursing, medicine, all this sort of thing too. So therefore the soul comes in with this quality. It needs to express and to experience life. And it will find ways in each incarnation to undergo a spectrum of experiences, quite different sometimes from the culture into which it was born. But nevertheless, there's a sort of a restlessness there within the soul. It has to move on, it has to continue to experience. Then the second quality of the Book of the Soul is that it has a title. And the title of the book is The Gardener of Souls, which is rather a lovely title. And it's reflected in the third characteristic of the book, and that is the quality of an image. And the image, and it may well change if I ever do another reading for you again, but as I see it, which reflects what you're doing in this incarnation, the image is of a young man, a gardener, standing leaning on a rake and looking at rows of seedlings coming up. And the indication to me is that from life to life, and we will see this when we look at previous incarnations, you've been committed to caring for other souls, to nurturing them, to healing them where you can, to facilitate the growth of souls. Oh, whilst I think of it, I have a birth time for you to test out for an astrological chart, and that birth time is 2:42 p.m. I'm sorry, I correct myself on that, 2:32 p.m. And I think that if you calculate a chart with this birth time, you will find that you have a Leo ascendant, and the moon rising in Leo is exactly on the ascendant. And the moon, as you may well know if you're interested in astrology, the moon is the feminine aspect. So it means that in this incarnation, that nurturing, looking after others, caring, being a mother figure, these will be all aspects of what you do, and that can come out in different professions. It can come out in social work or teaching or nursing. It can come out in a variety of ways, and we will look and see how this can be made more specific as we go on. So, by the way, Sun in Aries, Leo rising, Moon in Leo, that's the triple threat, the three main points of a chart in fire signs. It really indicates a character, a personality who takes the bit between her teeth, and once you've got that, nothing's going to stop you. Not the opinions of family, not the horrified thoughts of friends, neighbours, brothers and sisters. Nope, you're going to absolutely do what you feel you should do. And that's also that deep feeling level that you have, that's related to the deep reds, that red colour on the Book of the Soul. Now, we shall open the Book of the Soul, and it opens to the pages representing this incarnation. And on the right-hand side, the soul depicts itself in colour, and these are the colours of the human aura, and they indicate gifts, talents, purposes, energies that you can work with, and also hindrances and blockages sometimes. On the left-hand side is the soul expresses itself in words. So that's because word and image are the foundations of creation. In the beginning was the word. And all I'll say at the moment is that on the left-hand side, the soul has expressed itself with the title of the book. That is to say, the title, or the soul has put on the left-hand side, the Gardener of Souls, which means that your purpose for this life is around nourishing, helping, sustaining, revitalizing, caring for souls. And it's interesting that with the moon rising, by the way, that's a link to ancient ancestral past, because the moon in astrology is connected with the fourth house, which is the roots of consciousness, the very distant paths that we've been down. And the this aspect, or the colours, etc., they are associated here, they bring forth a memory, if you like, of a previous life. And this is an incarnation that was a long time ago, 50,000 years perhaps. And I'm not sure how right this is, because it shows you in Australia. I'm not sure when the first peoples came to Australia, but there you are. You are definitely in Australia. You've come across something like a land bridge, or you've come in a canoe across a series of islands, small islands like stepping stones, into the top part of Australia. And here I see you in a male body, really magnificently dark black male body of very very strong physically. You were a fighter, you were a leader of others, and so that you brought others of your clan with you into this new land. And I'm not sure what your name was there. Something like Wurujubindi, I think. Something like that. But you were responsible there for assisting your people to settle in this new place, to find ways of interacting with the land that would sustain you. And you were basically what I think we would call now a hunter gatherer culture. So that you would wander from place to place, and wildlife was very plentiful, and you learned to live off the land very, very quickly. And you weren't the first people to arrive in Australia, but you were very early on. So that from the very earliest incarnations, it's interesting that we see that you have a deep connection, not just with Australia, but also perhaps with the native peoples, the first peoples. Now, that could be interesting because it could mean at times that there's an attraction to work with indigenous people. And I'm sure you've been to the top end in this incarnation because the attraction would be very, very strong. But there are two things I want to say here, and one is that because the connection comes from memory, that after a while the impact of that memory, because much of our life is dictated by these memories from previous incarnations that force their way through into our thinking, and we project them out onto the world and create a situation where the old memory becomes part of the new life. So if you find that this happens, that you are working, for example, with Aboriginal people, you're attracted to Aboriginal people, it may be that there is a time when this memory will have worked its way through. And the other thing is, this is really interesting, is that souls don't incarnate, or they can, but in the relatively modern times, souls don't incarnate within an ethnic group. So if you're an Aboriginal person one life, it doesn't mean that you'd be an Aboriginal person in another life. And many of those who are part of the Indigenous people now, they were actually white people in the 19th century. And they were part of the invasion, especially from England, but also from other cultures. They were part of the invasion from England, which dispossessed the First Nations people of their land and their rights. And they basically tried to create slaves out of them. Now, many of those souls have now incarnated in Aboriginal bodies, in black bodies. And of course, the reason for that is that now they get to know and understand the implications of what they did in previous lives. So the funny thing is that even though you have a deep, deep connection with Aboriginality, if there's such a word, that you may find that your relationship with First Nations people has certain frictions within it. And you may come to a period when you say, oh, enough is enough. I think I've done what I came for. I've given my all here. I've looked after people as far as I can. And you'll feel suddenly, quite suddenly, not right now probably, but in a few years' time, time's up. And then you'll move on. And this is particularly going to happen, I think, from about the age of 55, 56, 57, that there are all sorts of forces, energies in the background of your life that are gaining momentum, and you must be experiencing at the moment, I would think, either trauma or anxiety or separation or discovering certain unpleasant things in about relationships with people. You're in a period of your life where your relationships with people are being very, very tested. It's like skeletons coming out of the cupboard and you're suddenly discovering that a relationship or a person that you thought you knew suddenly has a whole level of perhaps animosity or dislike or perhaps even attraction towards you. There are all sorts of things coming out of that relationship closet at present, and that'll go on for another 2 or 3 years. And I think that it's not till after that happens that you'll actually make a decision to move. The other way this energy can affect you is that you might find your own household is experiencing a bit of trauma, a bit of negative energy, but that doesn't quite describe it. It's more that you've have been forced to reconsider where you're living, how you're coping in the environment that you're living in. So there's a lot of dynamics happening within the life at the moment. Let's look at the aura colours now. The first colour is light red. It's a really light red, which is good. Again, red is the colour of vitality, of energy. And if you have light red, that's a great gift in this life because it means that you can connect easily with other people, that there's not a disconnect when you encounter people, but you can make friends easily. You should be good at networking with other people. And light red is important to express. It goes with being light-hearted, with seeing the brighter side of things, with sometimes thinking that life is a bit of a joke or that what I'm seeing is not really real. So there's a sense with light red people that I'm here for a good time. Not perhaps a long time. It's only later in life we decide to make it a good long time. But I'm here for a good time. So you want to express that vivacity, that liveliness, that happiness within you. You don't want to be pinned into deeper meaningful situations particularly. Those come along anyway from time to time. So the light red is really, really strong and vibrant within you. The second colour is a light blue. And light red, light blue, they don't get along particularly well because they mean opposites. The blues, in one sense, are very unlimited in their expression. That is, they give you a sort of a cosmic aspect that you want to experience yourself as part of the universe, you want to experience yourself as part of nature, probably comes from that particular Aboriginal incarnation where you were indeed, you could communicate with nature, you could communicate with the spirits of the plants. Now, the communication spirit is in a different way because we've lost that old clairvoyance. It's become atavistic. It's become something that's fallen into decay. So now when we connect with the spiritual world, it has to be in a different way. And it's interesting. You said something in your email about astrology. And blue is connected with astrology, by the way, because it's the colour of the sky. And it's interesting that in the first century, I think, you were in a male body there, and you were an astrologer. Not particularly a famous astrologer, but one you would sit in a booth in the marketplace and people would come to you with questions, and you didn't really do natal charts. You do what we would now call horary charts. You would answer questions from the time that they asked the question. And you actually got to be very good at it. Until, alas, the emperor of the day, probably a Tiberius or someone like that, decided to expel all the astrologers from Rome because he didn't like the idea that someone would get hold of his birth details and start to foretell what was going to happen to him. So he said, well, we'll get rid of all the astrologers. So you were exiled to a place called Capri, which I think is an island off Italy. You were, although you earned your living as an astrologer, you actually had wealthy relations. So they were able to house you and keep you fed there. So you didn't die. And it wasn't until when the emperor died you were able to come back off the island and onto the mainland of Italy. Where you then settled in, I think, what we would now call Florencia. And you died there. You were quite wealthy when you died because you went back to doing astrology, and you actually got quite wealthy from doing that, because all the you became a bit famous by being exiled, and now all the important people of the city wanted to come and consult you and have your advice. So what you may find, what I would expect from this incarnation is, I would say to you, beware of politics, because in the Roman incarnation you were a victim of politics. You were a victim of political views, and you suffered for that, and you were caught up, as the astrologer, you were caught up in one of the Roman factions, so that's why you were, apart from the fact you were an astrologer, but that's another reason why you were expelled. And when you came back to the mainland and lived in Florence, again you became involved in local politics, which really didn't suit you. So I would say today, beware of getting involved in politics. In that incarnation you were too naive, I think is the word, too innocent, so that your participation, you were used, people tried to use you or use your skills. So I'd say in your environment, be careful about other people trying to use you and use you for what you're good at, for your gifts, for your talents, or get you on side for different projects or different factions. Third colour a light yellow brown. That's actually quite good to have in the aura, because it's grounding, and you've got browns around the feet and actually browns around the hands, which is really interesting. Brown is, of course, associated with the earth, and therefore it has a grounding effect where it occurs. And the light yellow indicates that you have good thinking abilities, that you probably in this incarnation you probably have some qualification or university degree or something like that, because it indicates someone who can learn, retain and understand. Often it makes for people who are good teachers or good instructors, people who can listen, which is the first rule of teaching, listen to the needs of other souls and then be able to give the information or the energy needed by that particular soul. Interesting incarnation here, actually, in the 14th century, where you were again in a male body. It's not that you didn't have female incarnations, but the male ones seem to be standing up because they are they are very what's the word? Strongly directive incarnations. You were doing, you were going out there, you were achieving. So in this incarnation, you're in the church, you're sort of like a middle to high rank clergy person, and as I said, you're in Rome. It's interesting that the Roman thing is there. You should go to Rome one day and see what you experience. But this is a later version of Rome. This is Rome of the 14th century, and you were connected there. You were a friend of the Pope's. You'd been an abbot, I think, of a monastery out of Rome, a place called Venturia, some name like that, Victoria, something like that. You were head of the abbey there, and you were close to the Pope when the Pope was a cardinal. So when the cardinal was elected Pope, you was summoned to Rome, and he made you his chief negotiator. So he would send you out to different places, and you would go, for example, to Germany, and you would negotiate between, you would act as the Pope's representative in negotiations with the German Emperor. There was a lot of tension in that part of the world in those days. And you were good at your job. You were a good diplomat. So in this incarnation, you might find yourself in a negotiating positions once again, being mediator, trying to explain one side to another, to the other side, and trying to bring peoples or situations, opposite sides, together. Trying to unite. Alas, in that incarnation, once you left the country, war still broke out. So even the best negotiators and diplomats will have to accept sometimes that there is a limit to what they can create a treaty on. But very good thinking ability. If I mentioned writing, you could be a writer in this incarnation. You could be, if you're in the healing professions, you could be a clinician, someone who analyzes, diagnoses, and sorts out and orders situations, orders people, puts people in particular groups, and assists people to find out where they fit in. The colour from the shoulders, greens, quite dark greens. Green is movement. Oh, yes. You must have itchy feet with that colour. As I understand it, you're living in Broome, and you were born, born in Canberra. So, yes, you've moved quite a long way from Canberra. But that's what green will do. Green will instill within the thinking that I've got to make a movement from where I am. And that's really good. It means that you don't get stale, that you don't get welded into an environment, into a situation. You're never going to grow old and die dull. Life is always going to be an adventure for you. Green also associated with healing. Interesting incarnation in the 19th century, where you were a nurse in this life. Not a nurse, you were actually a doctor. Huh. Yes.
Big difference.
My wife says you've been a nurse. But you were a doctor, and you were on the battlefield in Crimea, and you knew Florence Nightingale there. In fact, you got along with her very badly.
Oh.
Because Florence Nightingale was the one who discovered that the doctors were not washing their hands before they were moving on from one patient to another. And so she was a very strong-minded woman, and you were a typical Victorian male and didn't like being told what to do by a woman. But nevertheless, she told you what to do. And you had to put up with it. But you did learn something from that incarnation, and that is that when you hear the truth, you can recognize it, because that was truth that you were being told. And even though she was this woman, the nurse was so far below you in the social scale, you actually heard something. And although very reluctantly, you went against all your social training and implemented what she said, and lo and behold, the mortality rate went down. So that you've got that ability to listen. You can also be very pig-headed, by the way. But that's okay. That's also good, because sometimes being pig-headed is the only way to bulldoze through a situation. Then inside the head, yellows with a slight brownish tint. That's quite good. That's actually a good colour. Again, good for thinking, good for planning, good for organising, being logical, thinking things through. It's all supported. The vortex is orange, and the vortex is like a funnel that comes down from the spiritual worlds and indicates, the colours that enter into that indicate what's happening to you in the next phase of your life. See, it comes down to the head, but it hasn't penetrated into the head yet, and the vortex as we see it is orange. And it's as though it's clouds of shimmering energy. And orange is a very powerful colour. It's a colour of individuality, and says this person will take no crap. This person is going to make a stand, and they will live or die by their truth. Actually, isn't that one of the questions you had? Yes, what is my fear of living my truth in this lifetime? Well, orange means that you will live your truth. Oh, and what's the fear? There's a fear of not living one's truth, isn't there? Well, in the 15th century, the 1400s, again, in a male body, you were burned at the stake for being a heretic. Actually, in England, you were in England then. And I think, if I've got it right, that you were a Catholic and you were burned at the stake for not going along with the king who wanted to get rid of Catholicism in England. So you were burned for being very refusing to give up your principles. No wonder in this incarnation you would have a fear of sticking to your guns. But the there's a truth about that. You see, you've got to look at what happened. You were stupid in a way in that incarnation to be so publicly proclaiming your religious convictions, because you weren't hiding them. You weren't a closet Catholic, so to speak. You were right out saying that what the king was doing was wrong and shouldn't be. The king shouldn't be divorcing and remarrying, getting rid of his wives the way he was. So you could have shut up in that incarnation. Well, you weren't going to change anything. You were trying to push a huge ball rolling down the mountain back up the mountain again, but it was too late. That ball just rolled right over you. And so what you've probably learned from that life is not that you can't live your truth, but you're going to be cautious about getting hurt from it. Sometimes one doesn't have to shout the truth from the mountaintops. Sometimes it's just enough to be that truth. And if that takes you into conflict, then you might look again at whether you really want to be in that situation. Do you really want to be in a situation where you're trying to fight against the forces that are around you, against overwhelming force? The thing is that if you look at it like a general, there is such a thing as a strategic retreat. And there's a lovely aspect, a story in the Gospels, where Jesus is talking to the disciples and saying, if someone invites you, go into their house and bring your peace with you. But if they don't, if the town doesn't invite you, wipe the dust of that town off your feet and leave and take your peace with you. So I find that a very pragmatic way of looking at living life. You don't have to be right. You don't have to be a crusader. Been there, done that. You don't have to try and persuade other people into doing it your way or thinking about things your way. Sometimes you have to look at the other people and say, okay, well, I think you're wrong. In fact, I know you're wrong. Don't say this to them, say it to yourself. I know you're wrong. But it's your journey. And if you need to take that journey and go on it, then I'm going to withdraw and allow you to do it. And sometimes that's an extraordinarily difficult thing to do, when you see people plunging, souls plunging towards what you think is destruction and despair and pain, and you really want to step in and save them. Sometimes we have to allow those souls the choice, because it's through choice that we grow. And if someone takes the choice away from another soul, then that prevents that soul that could have made that choice from growing. And your job in this life is to tend souls, and sometimes that's to empower choice. And sometimes we empower choice by removing ourselves from the picture. So these are things to think about. And as the orange engages with the thinking, you'll see things from quite different perspectives. You'll have an aha moment. Say, oh, that's what that was all about. Or you might say, oh, I don't need to do anything over there. Or you might even say, oh, yes, my time here is finished. It's time to move on. It's time to make a change. It's time to move to a different level. But there is change coming, powerful change coming within your life in the next 3 to 5 years. And as I've said, the forces of change at present must be very strong within the life. The cosmic colours, and these are colours that surround you, they're not part of your aura, but they surround you from the spiritual worlds, and they are gifts, if you like, to help you do certain things within life. And above the head we have purples, and below the feet we have something like an orange-green, that's green with a tinge of brown in it. And what's below the feet is the direction that you're encouraged to walk. And what's above the head is the way you can think about things. And purple is the colour of the mediator, which means that you will be in the position of mediating or negotiating or trading with others within your life, if not right now, within the very near future. There's going to be some trading going on, some bargaining, some negotiating. But purple, by the way, is a colour of change. So that means that your thinking about your situation is going to have change empowered within it. And below the feet, well, greens are also a colour of change, but because it's got the tinge of brown, this is gives you an element of prevision. And so rather than rush into something, it indicates a period where you can plan and sketch out in your mind the direction you want to move in. So it's change, but with a sort of a fuse in it, a circuit breaker in it, if you like. It's not, you're not compelled to change, you decide to make changes. It gives you the ability to bring decision into the change process. I'm going to return for a moment to the light red colour. Light red is often associated with incarnations where you are adventurous, where you are exploring, sometimes where you're fighting. Had a very interesting incarnation in the 19th century, by the way. Earlyish in the 19th century, I think. And you were, again, a male body here, part of a Dutch crew on board a ship that was might even be the 18th century, because I think it was pre-James Cook even. But you were on part of a crew that was looking, it was on a voyage of exploration, it was looking for new places, new lands to trade. And the master of the ship had come across old maps from prior explorers, which said that there was another land if you sailed south from Sumatra. So your ship embarked from Sumatra and it reached the west coast of Australia, and you and your crew was as you were sailing along that west coast, the ship was wrecked. It was wrecked on an island or a reef or a group of small islands off the coast of WA, and most of your crew actually survived, and they were able to rescue enough from the ship to build a little community for a while. Your brother and your sister, those souls, they were part of this crew, and you managed to, because you were very good with your hands in that incarnation, you were like the ship's carpenter, and you managed to, with the help of some of the other people, to build a small boat, and it was only enough for a few people. And the two people who are now part of your family, being your brother and sister, you left behind. It was a calculated move. You had to leave them behind. You didn't have enough room for everyone, so you left them, and they in the end they died of starvation. And it seems to me that in this incarnation you have wanted to balance that out with them. So rather than leave them behind in your life, you probably reached out to try and include them within your life this time. But you see, I think I've already said that our lives as ordinary, not really very conscious people are very largely governed by the projections of those energies that we inherit from previous lives. And I don't think your brother and sister feel included. I think that they feel excluded, and they want to reverse this. They want to exclude you. So I don't know how that can happen within a family situation. I don't think they can throw you out of the family, but they are probably, as long as they live from an unconscious level, they're probably going to have, a destructive attitude towards you. You're not part of their family. You're not part of their consciousness. So they want to push you out. They want to expel you. So that this time, instead of you leaving them, they're pushing you away. Now, karma resolves eventually. In fact, karma should, all that sort of karma should have ended about the age of 49, by the way. But it does take a while. It takes about 7 years, really, because karma has an inertia. It keeps moving. Once it's moving forward, it's got a moving forward energy. Physicists call it inertia. So that's a tendency to keep going, and eventually it runs out of steam, but it will take about 7 years, 7 or 8 years. By the time you get two or three or four years down the track, you may find that your relationships with your siblings become easier, quite gradually. But it's as though, and of course they've got to get to this age too, as long as they're in their 40s, they're going hell for leather with the old psychic memories that are pushing them into their current behaviours. So there is indeed a really, really difficult karmic situation there. But for what it's worth, you have done your part, because to resolve karma, karma is a bringing into balance. You've made your offering to create balance in the relationship, which is all one person can do. The other part of the balance has to also commit to repairing the wounds of the soul, so to speak. So the most you can do is make your offering and say, look, I'm there when and if you need me. And then you can leave that alone. I wouldn't keep poking at it. I wouldn't keep emailing and texting and trying to friend them on Facebook. I'd leave them well alone. Let them sort out that energy. And if you can allow them to work this dynamic out also, without trying to fix it, in the end you will have a relationship with them. But it may take still quite a few years. By the way, the best years of your life in terms of resolution and self-expression are the 60s. So you're coming up to a much better, much easier time of your life, as long as you survive the next 7 years, which I think you'll manage, Melinda. I think it's time that we looked at the instructions of the soul, which are on the left-hand side of the Book of the Soul. And that's given in a few lines. And the first line is a title. It's called The Gardener of Souls. And the first line underneath that says, to till the earth. And then the next one is to plant the seeds. And the third line is to water the seedlings. And the fourth line is to leave the harvest to another. So it seems to me that you may put a lot of work in this life. You're digging the earth, which means that you're really doing all the hard work here. And you're planting the seeds. That's great. That your message to these souls has been planted within the thinking, within the mind, within the heart. And you're allowed to stay around long enough just to see signs of life. That this hasn't been in vain, that something's happening, and it might only be in the very early stages, but there is life. You've brought something new into the lives of people. But the last line is interesting, that you don't get to make the harvest. There's another story in the Bible where Christ says that the fields are ripe for the harvest, and another line where one sows and another reaps. And it's as though rarely in a life do we get to do the whole lot. We rarely get to sow the seeds and reap the rewards. And that really means that we have to learn our own role, because it's one role, one set of skills to plant the seeds, but it's another set of skills to come along and harvest the results. That takes another set of skills indeed, and sometimes we have to know when to step away and make space so that new energies, new people can come in. So if you want to know your direction, I would say it's simply this: to realize that you planted, sowed, looked after people, and yet you may not get to see the full results of your work. And in fact, you may have to step away from what you've been doing in order to give space for this to happen. The symbol of the overself is of a person digging with a shovel. It's really hard earth, really hard work. And in the background is a black limousine. I'll come back to that shortly, because I've just realised I haven't told you about the other symbols in the aura. Symbols in the aura represent energies from previous lives, some of which have been active throughout this life, and some of which will be brought to fruition later in life. And the first one on the left-hand side is a lamb. It's a lamb standing beside you. And that's such an interesting symbol, because the lamb, of course, is the symbol of Christ. And Christ is the great shepherd of the sheep. Very like a gardener, really. And it indicates that many centuries ago, that this energy, the energy of Christ, was given to you it's interesting. I can tell you when it was given to you. It was given to you in the first century, where you were in a female body, during the time of the Emperor Nero. And, oh, I think it's Nero, might be another emperor. But you were killed in the arena by wild animals because you were a Christian. And all the people were screaming and shouting and cheering along the animals. So you died there because of your faith, which is another reason, by the way, that you would be hesitant to express your truth, as you put it, in this incarnation, because you've been destroyed for it twice. But the interesting thing is that because you died what you understood Christ to be in that incarnation, when you passed over the lamb, which is, how can I put it? It's the symbol of evolution, of renewal. I think that's the best way to put it. That was given to you and will be in your aura ever after. So that means that from life to life, you seek to renew not just yourself, but other souls. The image in front is an angel conducting you down a picture gallery, and that really means that this is a good time to reflect. The picture gallery is your life, and each of the pictures are episodes in your life. And you've come to a point where there's no more pictures. There are picture frames, but no more pictures. So you get to decide what you want to paint in your life to progress to the next. And the image on the right is a robin redbreast, and that's for the future. And that means that you will be given, you will achieve greater freedom, because birds can fly. They're not constrained to walk along the ground like we are. But you'll be given greater freedom to express the joy that is within you. And the symbol of the overself, which is a direction or a picture from the real self, to the soul, is of you digging a long trench, and it's really hard work. And to me, this is what you've been doing, perhaps for the past 6 or 7 years. You've been digging away, you've been trying to create something within the hearts and souls of other people. And it has been really hard work. It is hard work. But, you know, behind you, where you can't see, because you haven't turned around to have a look, is a black limousine, and that's to take you away. What this means is that when the time of labour is finished, then the means of transition will be provided. It's a hard thing to be a gardener of souls, to be a shepherd of the sheep, and to look after others, because it's rare that the souls that we're gardening or the sheep that we're shepherding, it's rare that they have any appreciation whatsoever for what we're trying to do. You know, sheep will just run in all directions no matter what the shepherd says. They'll fall over cliffs and get caught in shrubs and so on and so forth. So it's really hard work. And sometimes we don't get to see the results of our work and our energy and what we've given. But the lovely thing, Melinda, is that the results of that work within the spiritual worlds is visible to those with spiritual sight, and your life has created beauty in spirit. It's created beauty, awakening, and understanding in souls. And with the gifts that you've been given to do this, it is only right and only proper, really, that a vehicle will be provided for you in the future to bring this to other people, to be a minister to other needs, to assist the growth of many other people, perhaps not just in one part of Australia, but perhaps part all around Australia, because I can see you moving and travelling in the future, perhaps speaking, perhaps helping people develop protocols, helping people develop counselling strategies. But always, I think you'll be the gardener of souls, and that is a great responsibility, a great gift, but in the end, great joy. So shall it be.